in the media, that's what you see, that women should be a certain way, they should look this way, they should behave this way. You're a slag if you're promiscuous, you're this if you're that.
Marriage at 21 with aspirations of becoming a solicitor, but the role as a daughter-in-law came first, therefore my career was on a permanent hold.
And in my opinion, I feel mothers should really be at home looking after their children.
It will be a man's world if you let it be a man's world.
Sharing the light and the dark, making a better woman out of one another. That's sisterhood.
Welcome to a very special episode of the Sisterhood of Mummy Imperfect. I'm Mummy Imperfect, aka Reena Diptianabil, and today is International Women's Day. This podcast is always a celebration of women and sisterhood, but today it's even more packed with feminine energy. We'll be hearing from lots of different women who are from different age ranges and different walks of life. And I talk to my panel of fabulous females, Mercy and Nisha. We'll be talking about some pretty important issues today that affect all women and finding the answers to questions like, is this still a man's world? And can women have it all? Have a listen.
Let me wish you a very happy International Women's Day, ladies.
Thank you. Same to you.
So, what do you actually think about this day? Do you think that we need it? Because some might say, you know, if you want equality, then surely men should have a day as well. Or is it a little bit patronizing that there's a special Women's Day just for one day in the year?
Well, yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, because all day I've been thinking about this. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine just a short while ago, and we were kind of saying, there isn't a men's day, so why is there a women's day? We were saying it should be women's day every day. Do we need a special day for it? I guess it's just it's how you think and your kind of mindset. But I have to say, looking around my office today, it's all the men in the top jobs. Everything is still about men in the workplace. So I guess there is still a need for a day like today, if nothing else, but just to get people thinking about how things need to become more equal, and we've still got a long way to go.
You were right. That's my mindset exactly. Working in my field, it is all about men. And I think International Women's Day is just highlighting to men what us women can bring to the table, just getting them to sit back and tweak their mindsets, because there's a lot of unconscious bias and assumptions made about women and what our capabilities are.
I mean, don't you think that, like, in living in the West, right, living in England, as we all do, you kind of take certain things for granted? And I kind of think people who are saying, oh, why are we having an International Women's Day? You know, we don't need it. Look, we're doing fine. You forget about people in places like India, you know, I'm sure in some places in Africa and parts of the world, they haven't even got access to things that we've got access to.
I mean, I think you say that, but I think that even South Asians in this country don't have equality between men and women. And I'd probably go as far as saying that quite often my relationship, my family environment is not equal, and it's quite different to what I experience in my everyday life. When I come home, you know, there's a lot of expectation of women that hasn't gone away, that's similar to what it was like 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah. It depends
on how much you rebel against it. It doesn't always, it hasn't gone yet.
It depends on what you're referring to in terms of equality. So I usually split it up into two sides when you're looking at cultures such as my own culture, which is, my background is Ghanaian. There's equality in the sense that I want to be given opportunities to apply for and get the jobs that men are getting. And then there's the household issue. So culturally, women are seen as having a place within the home. In Ghana, in some families, it's a bit, what we would consider to be a bit extreme, in the sense that women should be in the kitchen, be housewives. But I think that narrative is actually changing quite a lot.
So it's changed there in Ghana?
Yeah, it's changed a lot in Ghana. Mm-hmm. But there is still an understanding in marriage that there are two individuals in a marriage and you can't have two pilots flying a plane. It has to be a pilot and a co-pilot. So there's, mm-hmm. are we arguing about equality in marriage, or are we talking about equality in the workplace? So for me, I'm quite traditional in the sense that I feel that everyone has a role in a marriage. There's a pilot and there's a co-pilot. Sometimes the co-pilot has to take the wheel and steer the plane. That's what it is. That's fine. Well,
who's the pilot, though? The man?
The way I've been raised, the man is the co-pilot. That's
the co-pilot or the pilot?
No, the pilot, sorry. The pilot. The way I've been raised is the man is the pilot. But you're an equal in a sense that you are the co-pilot. You're a pilot. But you have your distinguished role. We are mothers. Men don't give birth to children. We give birth to children. So as much as we want to try and have it all, we have a role. We are more, it's a fact that we are more nurturing than men are. We have periods, they don't. We have menopause, they don't. So I think looking at those biological facts, we have our distinctive role within marriages, but it doesn't mean that we have to be pushed in a corner and live in a time where we have to be restricted to just being housewives, if that makes sense.
I also think that because we've got these distinctive things that make us different, sometimes I'd argue that we've got a lot more to bring to the table.
Of course we do.
Because we can be the lead in the house, but yet we're still given the chance to go out to work and do that too. However, something's got to give, and generally I always find that it's the woman that ends up having to give, and that's difficult.
It is, and that goes back to what I was saying earlier on. It gives for the woman because it's not the man that's had to carry a baby for 9 months. Yeah. Yeah. It's not a man that's had to physically bring a life into the world and needs to really recover. You have to take time off to recover. A man doesn't really, because they haven't been through anything. Fortunately for us in the West, there are now laws in place like shared parental leave, mm-hmm. paternity leave, that allows the man to take that time off. But even when you look at paternity leave, maternity leave is more generous than paternity leave.
And quite often men don't take it up. They don't take the full amount of time that they're even allowed.
Yeah, that's true.
So
that's surprising, because I work in HR, and funny enough, most of the organizations I've worked in or worked with, men have been taking that. I've seen a big change where men are all for taking their full paternity leave, mm-hmm. and now they're shifting towards taking special, you know, shared parental leave, because women, you've got a lot of women who are career focused and want to go back into work early. It doesn't take a whole year to recover from childbirth. So it's like, okay, after the 1 month or so, I want to go back into work. So I'm surprised you're saying that, because I have physically seen that shift in men wanting to spend more time with their children and raise their children.
But maybe, I mean, there is obviously a distinction as well, because sometimes if the man has a higher is a higher flyer than the woman, then it generally tends to make more economic sense for the man to go to be
exactly
out there. So this is the thing as well, and then that takes you back to the original point, which is that, you know, there are opportunities, but women do get sidelined, and this is why it's important to remember that we can offer as much or if not more
I'm gonna touch on women having it all a little bit later on, but I want to kind of just talk about like safety and women being safe, like out there in the world. Like, it's 2019, right? And like, as we were talking about, do we need a Women's Day and everything, in this country as women, do you think that we are safe? Do we feel safe walking around the streets at night on our own, as safe as men, let's say?
I mean, personally,
are men really safe?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind walking around in the night, but I would resist walking, you know, somewhere that's very dark on my own. You know, I'd stick to main roads. I wouldn't say that I feel totally safe, to be quite honest, walking around on my own after hours, late at night. But I do it sometimes.
I feel safer than men, especially young black men. So I would feel safer walking in certain areas
okay.
than my brothers would. So my brother made a comment the other day about a different area. I can't remember where it was, where I go and come. I don't have any worries, where he said I'd never set foot there because it's a different area. And you've got people who will recognize or realize that you're not from there.
Okay.
So on that sense, I feel safer than a man. I can go anywhere in London and wouldn't think twice. I wouldn't think that I can't go from one postcode to another. Whereas men, especially young black men or young men who live in quote urban areas, have to think about. I think about, am I safe in the workplace? Do I feel respected in the workplace? Certain industries are still behind.
Yeah.
A lot of the blue collar industries are way behind, and you get a lot of discrimination against women, whereas it's sexual harassment or derogatory remarks in the workplace. So I have more concerns about me at work in that aspect than me walking on the streets.
Wow.
Men have been given power and they've abused it. And if it wasn't the case that men are running it, then women wouldn't feel the way they do. Why are women fighting for power? Why are they fighting for equal pay? Why are they fighting to wear what they want to without being looked at because I might get raped? Especially in South Asian families, even a girl being born isn't looked at as a great thing.
It definitely is a man's world, and it has been for centuries and throughout the ages. All aspects of society has been constructed by men to keep the female and the feminine energy suppressed and subordinate to a masculine dominated hierarchy.
I think it is still men's world, but it's changing now. I think women are more respected, and they can say now, we can hear their voices. So apparently there is a big change.
It will be a man's world if you let it be a man's world. Ladies, if you think your man's taking the piss and he's not pulling his weight, tell him. If you've got kids and you feel like you're doing all the work, tell him. You'll fall for anything if you don't stand for something.
You know, like, I've got a little bit of facts and figures here, right? So, you know, you said about women in the workplace.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is true that many UK companies pay men more than women. To this day, there is still that gender gap, right? And
yeah.
Then women are also underrepresented in UK Parliament.
Yeah.
There is also, sadly, an estimated 1.3 million women experienced domestic abuse last year.
Wow.
There's 62 million girls around the world who are denied education. There's also period poverty, you know, there's child marriage, there's FGM.
Yes.
These are things that are telling me it, out there in the world, we as a gender are not safe. And I know that when I go to India, I feel it.
Oh, yes.
I go to India, it's like I can't be wearing the same clothes as I do here and just walking around in random neighborhoods.
No, but you know, I mean, I totally agree with you, but sometimes I think that we can get taken away by what we read and see in the media, and that can scare you a bit more. But, you know, when you do go, I feel the same as you when I go to India.
You feel uncomfortable.
I wouldn't wear shorts. I wouldn't wear a little string vest. I just wouldn't, because I just think I'm, you know, you're going to provoke a reaction that you don't want when you know that it, you know, it's just not appropriate to walk around. And if you attract that kind of attention,
yeah,
then you need to kind of avoid it and stay away from it.
Yeah. Ooh. I'm just trying to think about Ghana now, in terms of when I go to Ghana, do I watch what I wear? I think I do to a certain extent. That's more, Ghana's very liberal.
Yes.
Depending on where you are. I think I do it more because of family, and there's a certain expectation that of when you're a certain age and you're a mother that you should behave in a certain way. But I could wear whatever I want to a club and go clubbing in Ghana and not feel that anyone's going to say anything about me. So I think it's quite different for Ghanaian women in Ghana than in India.
I've had so many voice notes from women that I know regarding all the things that we're going to be talking about and stuff that we've already spoken about, and I'm going to just be playing them throughout this podcast episode. And then one, I just wanted to play for you and then just kind of get your reaction to what this lady's saying.
Born in a Sikh family, first born, only daughter, and first female and first child to go to university, there were a lot of expectations, especially living in a household run by a very loving but dominating father. Marriage at 21 with aspirations of becoming a solicitor, but the role as a daughter-in-law came first, therefore my career was on a permanent hold. I do question myself, at the age of 46, was it all worth it? Along the way, I lost my own identity through such sacrifices. However, I do now believe changes can be made as I live and learn through my 14-year-old daughter's eyes, who has aspirations of becoming successful in life. The courage I have gained through my daughter has taught me changes can be made. We can maintain a healthy lifestyle, a career, a family. It's all about changing the mindset, about understanding, believing and doing it.
It's unfortunate, but it's good that she's recognised that and is trying to be different with her daughter. I think my family situation is very unique. On my mother's side, my grandmother was a single parent and raised her children by herself. And by the age of 30, she'd already built her own house, which was unique in Ghana at that time. We're talking about 1949 or 50 something.
Okay.
It was pretty much unheard of. And she has instilled in her daughters to make it on their own and be very independent. So I've been very lucky. That's what I've seen around me. But on the flip side, she's also made sure she's raised her sons to raise their daughters in the same way and also to be independent and also be good fathers. My grandmother on my dad's side did the same thing. So my dad has always just left me to do what I want to do. He hasn't really been restrictive in terms of you have to be a woman and this is your role as a woman. Just he wants me to have a career. He wants me to be successful. So I think it's down to culture. It's down to the way the parents have raised the children.
Nisha, do you think that, so I know you have one daughter, like, do you think that you would raise your daughter differently to how you were brought up?
Yes and no. So I've always been brought up by my parents to be fiercely independent, to kind of, they've never told me what to do. They've said, you know, this is what I think you should do, but they've never forced me in any way to do something that I don't want to. However, there's always been the expectation there. You know, I'm the oldest daughter. Again, similar to the voice note, you know, I was the first girl after about 15 years to go to university. You know, I lived on my own. I moved to London from Birmingham on my own. And my parents were very happy for me to do that, despite the fact family around us were saying to my parents, are you sure she can live on her own? Are you sure? And they, in the face of that, they just said, yes, it's absolutely fine. And they just let me continue to choose my own career path, to marry the guy that I chose. And I too did it at a young age. And I had three children, I guess, relatively young too. So I can relate. And I think, do you know what? I think every Asian girl can probably relate slightly to what that girl in the voice note was saying, because there are expectations. Asians like to, it's all about saving face, that, you know, what the community think of you. And they really do put that on their children, especially girls. It's about what, you know, what people say. You know, you have to look after your in-laws, because otherwise what will people say? You have to look after your children, otherwise what will people say? It's all about that, and it's a real shame. But however, even though I've been really independent all my life because my parents have taught me that, they did have that expectation of me that I should look after my in-laws, and that's what I've done. That's what I've done. We live together.
You live with them, don't you?
Yeah. I think it's similar for the Ghanaian culture. I think in the Ghanaian culture, again, it's similar to the Indian culture. People talk. I'm a single mum, and at first it's, when are you getting married? When are you getting married? When are you getting married? But the boys are not asked the same question to, okay, when are you having children? When are you having children? When are you having children? To now you're a single mum, it's like, okay, let's give her a breathing space. When are you getting married? When are you getting married again?
Oh, yeah.
But I'm lucky enough that I come from a family where they're like, nope, focus on yourself, raise your children, and just do you. And whatever comes in between or comes in your path that makes you happy, just go for it.
Also, I have to, just to add as well. So obviously I live in a family, in a home where there's three generations. I've got my in-laws, me and my husband, and then I've got my children. And what I find quite challenging in response to your question, Rena, about my daughter, is that my mother-in-law still has a preconception that women do housework and men don't do it. So when my husband, I'll say to him, okay, can you wash the dishes? Can you prepare dinner? If I, she will go up to him and say, oh, let me wash up. You go. And I have to, this is an ongoing thing. And I have to tell her, what's wrong with him washing up? What kind of example is that setting to my sons?
Yeah.
You know? And so I have to be harder than I would normally be, because I have to demonstrate equality to both, to my son and my daughter. I have to show my daughter that she can do what my sons can do, and I have to show my sons that they can, you know, that men can do what women can do, you know, cooking, cleaning. It's not, there's not a division of labor here. You've got to be able to do it all, whether you like it or not. What happens when they grow up, I don't know, but at least I will know that I've shown all three of my children that they can do everything and be fiercely independent and don't have to rely on anyone, despite the fact that I'm fighting an everyday battle with my mother-in-law, who tries to show that this is what men do, this is what women do.
Mm.
Good on you for actually saying something. That's quite awkward sometimes, isn't it? Like with your in-laws and your husband's there and you want to say something. So, I respect to you for saying that. But when you had your daughter, did your in-laws and family, extended family, did they celebrate that as much as when you had your sons?
Yes. Well, I think I have to say it was definitely celebrated, probably because I had two sons before that.
Oh, okay. That changes things.
So my sister had a daughter first, and, you know, we were very happy. I mean, you know, our generation doesn't give two monkeys. However, even my mum was like, oh, it would have been nice if she had a son first, you know. And you're kind of like,
get a son in the bag, then you can have a door.
Exactly. Then you can do what you want. And I was just like, oh, mom, you know, my mom, my mother, she's got two daughters and she's still saying things like this. It's still, you know, there's still this bias towards men there that they bring something that women don't. And I just think that that's just it. You know, we've still got quite some way to go before we're valued for everything that we can do.
Do you think it's a cultural thing, though?
Yeah, it's definitely a cultural thing. I don't think there's any other way to explain it. I mean, it goes back to the days when women were seen as a burden, or girls were seen as a burden, and the man is the one that, you know, brings his wife over, and they look after the parents when they get old. The woman is a burden. It's terrible.
It is absolutely terrible. And I'm someone who's got three daughters now. I'm coming from an Indian Punjabi family. Like, can you imagine? People found it hard to say the words congratulations. So some people in the family, when I was like, oh, you know, I've had the baby, it's a girl, they would just say, never mind.
Wow.
never mind. And I mean, I think the first time they were like, oh, that's nice. And then second time, never mind. Third time, I think half of them didn't even turn up to see the baby.
Oh, goodness.
Wow.
And the thing is, the third time, I actually found out, me and my husband found out the gender of the baby beforehand, because we didn't the first two times. But I actually thought, no, let's find out, because we've got two girls, right? If it is a third girl, I would like to prepare the wider family so that they can practice saying congratulations for a few months, and then they can actually say it when she's born.
Yeah.
So, like, I think even my dad is like really cool, and, you know, he's very like, he's always made us be independent, and he's got three girls though, so he didn't have boys and girls to differentiate between, right? So, because I'm from a family of three girls as well. But my dad, when I said to him, oh, so we have another girl, he actually was like, oh, well, that's the danger, isn't it? That's always the danger of trying again for another child, is that it might be a girl.
But this is the thing. I mean, I'm sure your dad loves your girls more than anything in the world.
He loves them so much, yeah.
It just comes from a place that I don't think they sometimes even understand. It's so conditioned that they don't even know where it's come from. And it's just such a shame that, you know, but luckily our generation isn't like that because we understand that it's no different, boys and girls.
Exactly. And even people of our generation, like some people were like, oh, I feel really sorry for your husband. Oh, God, that's just too many girls around. Doesn't he feel like he wants a son? You know, and these were just non-Asian people who weren't even that old saying that. So, you know, there's all sorts of comments. But you know, like how a lot of Indian people, they give out mithai, like Indian sweets, when they have a boy. I don't know if you know about this, Mercy. But no. When they have a son, they will distribute boxes of Indian sweets to the family and everybody they know, right?
Okay.
And when they have a girl, they don't.
Nothing at all.
No, apart from the people that are actually woke and normal. Like, like now there is a trend. There's actually a campaign called the Pink Laddu campaign.
Yeah. So,
this was a campaign to encourage people to actually give out the same sweets for women, for girls, for the birth of a girl. And when I had my youngest daughter, I actually did give out boxes of Indian sweets. I gave out boxes of pink and white mithai to family and friends and work colleagues and stuff. I should have done that with all of them, to be honest. I don't know why I didn't, but I was like, no, I will do this.
Now that's good. It's just changing. It's changing the narrative, isn't it? It's changing what they deem to be the norm. And I think that's the only way you can educate people and change things is by taking steps like that. It may seem like a little step, but the message is a big one. In the Ghanaian culture, it's not like that. You do have people who still say, oh, you know, it'd be good to have a son, and they will still say, oh, you know, bouncing baby boy, you had a bouncing baby boy, and I had a girl first, and we thought it was going to be a boy, or she was going to be a boy, and it wasn't. But I think everyone was still happy anyway. When I had my son, it's like, oh, yes, a boy, bouncing baby boy, a bouncing baby boy. Well, she's a bouncing baby girl, you know. So, but I don't think it's as extreme as the Indian culture.
No, it's extreme, but, like, you know, I am obviously married to a Ghanaian guy, and so I have Ghanaian family now. And I still felt some pressure, actually, from certain family members, like, oh, you've got to have another one. And, like, so then when after having the third daughter, they were like, well, you've got to have a fourth now, because then it will be a boy. You have to just get the boy. And I'm like, nah, I'm not having the fourth.
You do have people with that mindset. But now, again, that's shifted a lot in terms of just be thankful for what you have.
Absolutely. You know? There are so many people out there that just can't have kids, or, you know, have miscarried, or just very unfortunate circumstances. We just have to be lucky that we've got healthy children.
That's so much to be grateful for. Definitely.
You think about, like, having kids and raising a kid, woman definitely makes more sacrifices. I know so many people just left their career, so woman is more on making sacrifices. But I think it's still possible to have a lifestyle, have a family. It lies onto the dynamics in your relationship with your husband or with your partner. So it's the most important thing.
It's very difficult to have it all, as they say, but I don't think it's impossible. I've attempted many times to have it all after going back to work after three children. And yeah, I made many sacrifices, by me mainly as the mum, but it's gotten easier every time. And as they've got older, it's got easier as well. My husband has made sacrifices too, but I think career-wise, the mother does tend to lose out, I think, more than the guy. I think you've got to make sacrifices. I look back now and I actually don't see them as sacrifices, but the adjustments that we made together to make sure that we were all sane, healthy, and above all, just being happy.
Just about all the women that they plan to combine careers and family in some way, thinking that they will succeed on both. They would have to make compromises that the men in their lives were far less likely to have to make. Every woman has to figure out how to combine professional success with a real commitment to the family. It's not easy, but it can happen when you choose the balance in life.
I think women living in 2019 can have it all, can have the job, the career, and be a wife and a mother. But however, I do feel with all of that comes a lot of stress, and women are really killing themselves trying to have the best of both worlds. And although they can have it all, I don't agree with it, and I don't feel women should put that pressure on themselves. And I think to do a job 100%, to give you 100%, you either do one or the other. And in my opinion, I feel mothers should really be at home looking after their children and not worry about work.
Can we have it all? Right, the question that I've asked lots of my people in my sisterhood, right, can we have it all? And they have just been like going mad, sending me so many voice notes to this, because obviously people feel strongly about this. So, and why can we have it all? I mean, in this day and age, can we have the career that we want, the lifestyle, the family, or are we still making sacrifices?
I think that we can't have it all. As a woman, I don't think you can have it all. I think you have to, you can either have 100%, you can either be 100% family, 100% career, 75% career, 25%, you can split it, but you can never have everything. There has to be a sacrifice. I mean, my personal example, from the day that I had my first child, I don't think I've moved very high up in the career ladder at all. And, you know, I'm very grateful for the fact that I've got three gorgeous children, so I don't feel upset about that. However, if I wanted to progress my career, that would mean that I can't give as much to them, and they're more important to me. So, and I see this in the workplace as well. It's always the woman, tends to be the woman, that ends up doing one or the other. The high-flying career women are not there for their children.
Yeah, you're right. I think if you want to be an engaged parent, then you can't have it all. Unfortunately, in business, there is a culture of presenteeism. And I always argue that just because you're present doesn't mean your work is quality. Mm-hmm. For me, my personal experience, because we've had to, when you go on maternity leave, you take a year out of the business. That shouldn't be an excuse. But it does affect your career. When you come back and you're trying to get into it, there's expectation that those who come in at 6 o'clock in the morning and leave at 8 o'clock at night are the ones who are promoted. If you don't stay after your finish time, or if you do leave on time when you're contracted to leave, again, that can be frowned upon. But you're right. If you want to be a parent in the world we live in today, where you have all sorts of things going on with drugs, knife crime, children being exposed to things that I was never exposed to as a child, you have to be a mother or a parent who's present. And unfortunately, it's the mums that are. For whatever reason, it may be because we are taking time out and wanting to enjoy motherhood and taking the whole year maternity leave. But I don't think you can have it all. You can't. You really can't. Something's got to give. Something definitely slips through the gaps.
Do you know what? I think I had a totally different mindset before I had children. Like, I thought, okay, I'll just have a little kid, you know, slot them into my life. I carry on with my career goals and it's all going to be fine. But little did I know that I would then be slotting my work around her, and then my three children slotting work around them. And I would never have said this before, but now I have a lot of respect for people who are just like, you know what, I'm actually not working for a few years until my kid goes to school, and maybe even beyond that, I'm going to stay at home and I'm going to be a stay at home mom. And before I would have been like, stay at home mom, would you watch Jeremy Kyle all day or something? But now, you know, now I know there is a lot more to being a stay at home mom, and if you want to be on it with the kids, like you said, Mercy.
Yeah,
I agree, but I couldn't be a stay at home mom because I don't feel like that would suit my personality. So it also depends on you as a person and what you think suits your lifestyle.
Yeah.
I don't think I could be at home, but yet I couldn't be 100% at work either. You know, I had to split it.
It's hard to find that. It's hard to find that balance. You want something for yourself as well, don't you? You want to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of women, you hear them say when they go to work, it's a break.
Yes.
You know, from being at home. And, you know, it's quite important to have something for yourself, even if it is going to work.
Definitely.
I think I had to take a break recently, as you know, Rena, from work. And even that, it was beautiful being able to. I used to say to the other mums, oh, I'm being a mum. I feel like I'm a mum because I'm able to take the kids to school. I'm able to come home, then pick them up, and I'm cooking dinner. And I'm actually thinking about dinner. I'm not just chucking things together. I'm able to sit down and go through homework, and I'm not so grouchy anymore. Because when you're doing a typical 9 to 5:30 or 9 to 5 job, you're getting home 6 o'clock, or maybe the kids are at the childminders or whatever. You pick them up. You haven't got enough time in the evening because you're then rushing to give them dinner, put them to bed. They're not getting the quality. But also there was a part of me that used to sit there and think, I've worked so hard for my career that I can't just let it go. And I've got, my family have been really, really supportive in the sense that they've said, you've worked so hard to have a career. So yes, you've taken a break, but we would support you to have your career and then still get a chance to be a mum as well, in terms of you don't have to worry about childcare. And I've been lucky enough that I found roles that allow me to do flexi working. But I do appreciate that not a lot of people have that opportunity. Not a lot of women get that because businesses assume that you're sitting at home looking after the children, which is far from the truth. But at the moment, I still don't feel like I have it all. I feel like I can't have it all because if I'm at work, I'm not able to pick up my children. Somebody else is picking up the children. And by the time I get home, have you done your homework? Have you eaten? Go have a bath. Go to bed. You know, I think it's unrealistic to feel that you can have it all unless you're a millionaire and you run your own business or something. And even that, you probably still can't have it all.
Sometimes people do look like they have it all. You know, they might be like surgeons or something, and you know, they're in an amazing house, kids are going to some amazing school, and then sometimes they don't actually spend that much time with their children. The children are like crying for nannies at night, so they've sacrificed that time.
It's
very difficult. It's honestly very difficult. And like you were saying about careers, like every child I've had has like put me back a little bit. I've had to then climb back every child. And, you know, just at that point where I was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm making progress. I had another child. And I had another child because I wanted to, you know, I wanted to have 3 children. But I think now is the time when it's like, nah, I'm going to do something now.
But an interesting fact that I've seen is more women are running their own companies.
Yes.
Because employers are not providing them with that flexible working. I read somewhere that a majority of new businesses and startups in the UK and in the States are run by women. Because women are feeling the pressure of not being able to be engaged with their children the way they want to engage with their children. And I've got my own business. When I was off, because I just can't sit down and do laundry all day, even I juggled it all, I still wanted to get that part of my brain engaged in what I did as a career. So I started up my own business, and I found that the reason I did that is it did allow me to choose when I wanted to work. Did I have it all? I still didn't have it all, because there are certain things I couldn't go to. I can't go to networking events at 9 o'clock at night. I can't travel out of the country for 5 days or 2 weeks on business conferences. So again, women are trying to maneuver through that, having it all, but it's near enough impossible to.
I agree as well, because after I had my second child, I too bought my own business, because I had this horrible fear that I wouldn't be able to go back to work and look after my kids. So it wasn't was an attempt by me to try and have it all. But what I found was that I'd need to work evenings. I might sometimes need to work weekends. I'd need to be doing things at times when they needed me. And I'd be worrying constantly because if I didn't, I wouldn't make any money and I wouldn't progress. So that, to me, was just as bad. I could have just, if I'd just gone back to work, at least I would have felt like those things would have been off my mind. So I eventually I gave it up and went back to working for someone. So, I mean, I really admire women that are able to run their own businesses and manage their time and still make it work. But I think that, Rina, like you said before, I think those women look like they've got it all, but they've got their own issues and their own problems too.
Exactly.
You know, it's not as simple as it looks. You just got to find something that works for you and that you can live with.
Yeah.
That's what we all have to do, don't we?
It's about planning. So I do try and plan as much as possible and have reliable helpers, be it nannies or friends, family, to support, especially with childcare. And just being prepared, not leaving things to the last minute as far as work is concerned. For me, working as a self-employed person has tremendously helped me to get a balance, family life and work balance, which enables me to have it all. So yeah, there are times it gets a bit hairy, but overall I think in this day and age it is possible to do as one pleases and still have a fulfilling life with your children, your partner, in your work.
Personally, I think women can have it all and more. Why not? What's to stop us? But I don't think that making sacrifices means that women don't have it all. I think it depends on what all means to women, and I think all may mean different things to different women at different stages of their life. And so making sacrifices at different stages of your life doesn't therefore mean that then you're not having it all.
In the industry that I work in, obviously creative, radio and the media, I see like really inspirational women all the time who, you know, have these high-flying careers and they've got children, they're still managing to look after them, to bring them up, to be inspiring role models and do the jobs that they do. And we are in an age where you can do whatever it is that you want to, and there's ways that we can make that happen. You know, childcare is available, you know, jobs are becoming a bit more lenient in terms of that. There's even some workplaces that have creches within their work, and I think that's really amazing to see that these things are in place for women. Just as well, it is also hard, you know. I feel like we do have a bit more of a pressure as women in society compared to men. I do think that's true.
We are still put in boxes. You're either the cute one or the fit one or the sexy one. You can't really exist outside of that. If you're successful in your career, you're either asexualized or there are rumors that you slept your way to the top. And we still make sacrifices. If you leave work to have a kid, you find that your career is still lagging behind your male counterparts. And on top of that, when you have relationships, you're still judged first on your looks. So there's still a way to go. But the idea of having it all for our mothers and grandmothers was just a fantasy. But for today, it's just within reach.
So we're celebrating women, right? It's Women's Day. And I want you to tell me about two women that you admire, that have inspired you. And they can be famous or not famous. So it's up to you.
Number one would be my mum. I admire my mum because she left a country that she was born in at the age of 19 by herself, traveled to a country she didn't know anything about. She sold her sewing machine. She always tells me this story. She had a Singer sewing machine because she was learning how to be a fashion designer or something. And she'd heard so much about England and she didn't have to, because my grandmother was doing really well. She had her own business. She built her own house. My mum just said, oh, I just want to go and see what this England's about. Sold her machine bought a ticket because my grandmother refused to do so and ended up in England. And what she met when she came to England was no dogs, no blacks, no Irish. Racism, not being able to go for the jobs that she wanted to go for. And then she ended up raising four children by herself. And made it work somehow, learned a language that she wasn't her mother tongue, supported her children. And for me, that is just inspiring. I have so much available to me. It's still tough, but I had education. I had the opportunity to work. My mum didn't have any of that. I can live anywhere I want to. She didn't have those options, and she managed to maneuver through all of that adversity and raise her children. So I really admire her for that. She's a tough woman. Tough woman.
Well, she sounds like it. She sounds like it. Respect to her.
Definitely. The second woman would be Maya Angelou. I've always been a fan of Maya Angelou. I remember being in university, reading her autobiography and seeing what she had to go through from a young age, being raped, being told she was ugly, being, you know, as a woman of color, all the racism that she had to face in America, and ending up becoming what she was, again, truly, truly inspiring, very inspiring.
Yeah.
So those are the two women who inspire me.
Okay, Nisha, what about you?
I have to start with the same as you, Mercy, my mom. it's the story starts a little bit similar. So she came over to England, not being able to speak a word of English, in the 70s from Uganda, when Idi Amin threw all Asians out of the country. When she got here, she was desperate to become a nurse. And it's a career that would have suited her perfectly because of her nature. But her brothers, and now this goes back to where we started, her brothers didn't allow her to study. So she wasn't allowed to become a nurse. She had to work in the growing family business that they had. And then she had an arranged marriage to my dad. And she was a housewife. And over the years, she supported my dad in his business. So she'd support my dad. And she was living... She raised us as children, and while she was working as well. And then as we got older, my grandma was very ill, and my mum looked after her until the very last day, literally at her beck and call for about 3 or 4 years. You know, proper love and care and respect for someone that can do that for someone up until their dying days. You know, it was just amazing to watch what she would do, because I don't think I could ever have the heart. I'd love to think that I'd be able to do it, but I don't think I could. And then, you know, she's retired now, but she's such a big support to me and my sister. My sister lives in America, and every single day I wake up, and when I speak to her, I admire everything she does. She's a retired Asian woman with terrible arthritis. She hasn't been educated, yet she goes out and she goes to help in homeless shelters and soup kitchens. And she's the one that people will go to when they want something, sewing on their jumpers. She's the one that an older person will call if they need their shopping done. And it's just an amazing gift to be able to help people with such a clean and good heart, and she's definitely a huge inspiration for me.
She sounds awesome.
Yeah,
she is. She's great, and I, you know, I'm very lucky to have someone that can give so much and expect nothing in return back. So, you know, a lot of love for my mom. And the other person is one of my best friends, because I met her in 2004. And we quickly became friends. And when I met her, she was a really feisty, outgoing, sociable, opinionated woman. And after a few years, she became very ill. And she found out that she had MS. So, and throughout that time, she had two beautiful girls. And I've seen her go from a really fit woman to someone that can now not walk anywhere without sticks, cannot bend her legs, and is going through immense pain every minute of her life. But when you meet her, she's always got a smile on the face, and she's always so positive about everything. And it just makes you realize, you know, to have that, to have such a positive outlook on life when you're going through so much pain is only something to celebrate. She's, you know, an amazing person as well. So yes, she's the other person that I respect and admire for the way that she continues her life.
Yeah. I like the fact that you guys have chosen non-famous people as well. Extraordinary, ordinary women. I like it. And I'm going to say my mom as well, actually, because my mom, she was born in Singapore, and then the whole family came here when she was a young child. And she actually wanted to study. She wanted to go to university, but her parents made her get married. She didn't really want to. And they kind of took her to India to get her married. And then she ended up living in India, which she had no wish to do. She ended up marrying my dad. And then she lived there for 2 years and ended up like loving it there and everything. But then she came back here to have me. They were actually supposed to go back, but ended up staying here. And then she, after years of like being a teaching assistant, she was a teaching assistant in the school that we went to. She, after having my little sister, she decided that she wanted to actually become a teacher. So that was a lifelong dream of hers. And then at about 36 years old, she went to uni and got her teaching degree. And it was funny because like I was in my first year of uni and my mum was in her final year of her degree at uni. We were kind of both students together at one point. And I don't think I realized at the time, because I was probably in my own world, but I didn't realize how difficult that must have been to have three children and to be doing a degree at the same time.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's actually just retired. So she did work as a teacher for quite a while, a really, really good teacher. And then also, as you were saying, Nisha, she about your mum being a carer, like my mum, as well as working full time as a teacher, she cared for my grandma, her mum, who was very ill, and she, you know, she used to bring her home and give her a bath and things, wash her hair for her, like just everything. So it was a lot that she was managing all at the same time. And so now she's retired and she's actually in India and she's working at a school helping kids to learn English, and at this center that her and my dad run, which helps disadvantaged girls become better, well, disadvantaged kids sharpen up their English and maths and stuff. So that's what she's doing now.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good.
And I don't know about anyone else. There's other women in my life, like friends and aunties, and I've got a lot of strong women in my life, so I can't really choose. I find it hard to choose another person, but my mum is my number one, I think.
Yeah, I agree. It's always great to be able to have your mum as an inspiration. I'm sure all of you, both of you will also agree that I hope that my daughter and my children think I'm an inspiration one day.
Well, my daughter tells me that I am, actually. She always says
that I'm
a role model. Yeah, and that's what keeps me pushing to continue to do well, because I know she's watching everything I do. And hopefully I'm doing the right thing for my daughter to turn around and say, you're my role model.
Oh, that's so lovely.
Sisterhood is running a marathon, and all having different reasons that we're running, all going at different speeds and facing different struggles. The sisterhood in that is cheering on those that pass us, helping those that we see struggle, and remembering that we're all in it together.
Sisterhood to me means being able to hold a safe space for other women and people, and making other people feel like it is okay to be sort of vulnerable but still kind of valued and really important and empowered through that vulnerability.
To me, sisterhood means being honest with one another, being supportive, being a shoulder to cry on, being an extended arm to give a high five. It means always showing up without judgment.
To me, sisterhood is the support, stability, and unconditional love of fellow female or female collective. It's not necessarily a blood relation. It allows a person to feel held, empowered, strengthened and elevated to be themselves, honour themselves and represent who they truly are in today's world and what they stand for.
Obviously, we have sisterhoods, but I think, like, talking about, like, social media, I think women to other women, they're not kind. I believe in sisterhood. For example, I have, like, a WhatsApp group. We call it, like, oldies and goldies. I have friends from Turkey, and we talk everything, and we take care of us.
Even if it's not your... from your friendship squad, there's certain individuals that you meet in life that you just connect with on a wave that you don't with anyone else. And I consider these women my sisters. You know, I've working in the industry that I work in, I meet people all the time and fellow creatives, and sometimes people just get you in a way that others don't. As women, I think we have a special bond that we connect with emotion. We connect differently compared to men. And to me, that's what it's all about, being a sister. It's about support, solidarity, emotion. It's about feeling, it's about love, and it's about that vibe.
Please, before we go, what does sisterhood mean to you? Since this is a sisterhood on Mommy Imperfect.
For me, is having a circle of women, strong women, who don't judge, who are there to give sound advice, who are there to pick you up when you're falling, but it's more, it goes both ways, to inspire each other. What else? And share stories, because you learn from one another.
Yep, definitely. Nisha, what about you?
Yeah, I have to totally agree. You've kind of almost taken the words out of my mouth. yeah, to me, sisterhood is having a group of women who are like you and who are not like you around you, to inspire you, to talk to give opinions to and from, to help you when you're down, for you to help, and also just to be together and laugh together, yeah, and, you know, to share and to be able to help each other. That's what it means to me, I guess.
Thank you so much, ladies, for being part of this special episode of Mommy Imperfect, of the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect. And I'm sure I will be speaking to both of you again very soon.
You've been listening to the Sisterhood of Mommy Imperfect. Thank you for tuning in. Please subscribe if you already haven't. And if you want to leave a comment, please do so. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, take care.